अन्तकाले च मामेव स्मरन् मुक्त्वा कलेवरम्
यप्रयाति समद्भावम्
याति नास्त्यत्र संशयः And whoever at the end of his life quits his body remembering me alone at once attains my nature. Of this there is no doubt. Purport by His Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. In this verse, the importance of Krishna consciousness is stressed. Anyone who quits his body in Krishna consciousness is at once transferred to the spiritual nature of the Supreme Lord. The Supreme Lord is the purest of the pure. Therefore, anyone who constantly is Krishna conscious is also the purest of the pure. The word smaran, remembering, is important. Remembrance of Krishna is not possible for the impure soul who has not practiced Krishna consciousness in devotional service. Therefore, one should practice Krishna consciousness from the very beginning of life. If one wants to achieve success at the end of his life, the process of remembering Krishna is essential. Therefore, one should constantly, incessantly chant the Mahamantra, Hare Krishna,
Hare Krishna,
Krishna Krishna,
Hare Hare,
Hare Rama,
Hare Rama,
Rama Rama,
Hare Hare.
Lord Chaitanya has advised that one be as tolerant as a tree. Taror Iva Sahishnana. There are so many impediments for a person who is chanting Hare Krishna. Nonetheless, tolerating all these impediments, one should continue to chant Hare Krishna,
Hare Krishna,
Krishna
Krishna,
Hare Hare,
Hare Rama,
Hare Rama,
Rama Rama,
Hare Hare, so that at the end of one's life, one can have the full benefit of Krishna consciousness. I am very grateful for this opportunity to be amongst all of you this evening. It is such a very great pleasure for my eyes and my heart to see such large and enthusiastic attendance in this great city of Pune, to come and hear about the purpose of life. This Krishna consciousness movement is very, very essential. Not only for the present moment, but for all time, especially in this age of Kali. Kali Yuga means a time when disagreement and quarrel can come about at any moment, in any place. We see the condition of the world. And there are so many people trying to create solutions to the problems of the world. Prahlad Maharaj teaches us in Srimad Bhagavat Puran that when we try to solve material problems with material solutions, we ultimately create more complex and difficult problems through the process. The real solution to the problems of this world is revealed in the Holy Scriptures by the Lord Himself. He who is the creator of the universal creation knows perfectly how it operates and what is its purpose. Unless we hear from him submissively, with faith, birth after birth after birth, we become entangled in the complexities of material suffering. Krishna tells us in the second chapter of Sri Bhagavad Gita that the life-giving force is the spirit soul.
that spirit soul is unborn, undying. It is eternal, primeval, and is not slain when the body dies. It cannot be cut into pieces by any weapon, withered by the wind, drowned by water, or burnt by fire. It is transcendental because it is part and parcel of the Supreme Absolute Truth. Mamayavamso jiva loke jiva bhuta sanata. The spirit soul is part and parcel of the Supreme Soul, Sri Krishna. In Brahma Samhita, it is explained by Lord Brahma, Ishvara Parama Krishna Sachid Ananda Vigraha, Anadira Dir Govinda Sarvakaranakar. Krishna's body is eternal, full of knowledge and full of bliss. He is the cause of all causes and the source of everything. Brahma Sutra declares Janmad Yashayataha. That Krishna is the origin, the source of everything, from whom everything emanates. The spirit soul, the life-giving force, wherever there is life, is Satchidananda. It is part of Krishna. It is by nature pure. Our beloved Guru Maharaj, Srila Prabhupada, would often give a very simple but perfectly logical example. When water falls from the cloud, it is pure and transparent. But when it comes in contact with the earth, it becomes mixed with all sorts of mud and other elements. And its natural, transparent quality is obscured. Similarly, the spirit soul is pure. Why? Because Krishna is pavitra. He is all pure, and we are emanating from him. But when the spirit soul comes in contact with this material nature, it becomes mixed and covered by the three modes of nature. Sattva-guna, Rajaguna, Tamaguna. These modes of nature are like mud that obscure the transparent pure quality of the Jivatma. And due to these three modes of material nature, we are impelled to think, to speak, and to act in various ways. According to our free will, we surrender to the influence of the modes of material nature. And for every action, there is an equal corresponding reaction. This is the law of karma. It is an irreversible law of nature. For every word we speak and every action we perform, there must be a reaction. And this creates not only physical and mental pleasures and suffering, but it also, every act and word we speak, creates a particular disposition within our hearts. Srila Prabhupada gives the example that you get a particular type of body according to the price you pay. If you want very, very cheap set of clothes, then you just pay a few paisas and you will get a cheap set of clothes. If you want very luxurious, nice, first-class clothes, you have to pay the price. That is how the laws of nature work. According to how we invest in our karmic life, we will get a particular type of body. There are 8,400,000 species of life. Each one facilitates a particular opportunity to get the reactions of our previous karmas. Srila Prabhupada gives example that the wind is by nature pure. When it passes through a rose garden, it acquires very aromatic fragrance. When that same air passes through the toilet, sewage dumps, it takes on a terribly disgusting fragrance. The law of nature is we become like who and what we associate with. Show me who you associate with, and we will know very clearly who you are. You put iron rod in fire, it becomes like fire. So according to the modes of nature we associate with, that influences our consciousness and creates the destiny of the soul in a particular species of life. After traveling through 8,400,000 species of life, one is given the great fortune of human existence. It is so very rare. It is a precious opportunity. The greatest fortune is to take this human life. In general, we have to suffer through 8 million lower species till we come to this opportunity. The lower species are eating, sleeping, mating, defending, trying to find happiness in this world, trying to avoid miseries in this world, and die and reborn again and again. Atato brahma jigyasa. Human life is specifically meant for self-realization. Fact is, through all the lower species, we are trapped. The spirit soul, the eternal, liberated, pure part and parcel of Krishna, is imprisoned within the cage of Maya's modes of nature. And there's no way out of that cage. Like a prisoner, we're just thrown some food. Sometimes there may even be the opposite sex in our cage and a little society in our cage that we're trying to enjoy with. But it is a miserable, imprisoned condition. The animals, the plants, the insects, the birds, the fish, they have no way out of this cage of material bondage. But when we come to this human form of life, by Krishna's causeless mercy, he opens the door to that cage. And not only that, yada yada hi dharmasya glanir bhavati bharata abhyutama dharmasya tadatmanam srijam yaham. He personally descends into this world again and again and again to call us, come, come you foolish bird, O spirit soul. The door is open. Be free. Come out of this cage of material entanglement that is the source of repeated birth and death. That is the special feature of human existence. All others are helplessly trapped in human life. The door is open. Krishna appears in his avatars. He sends his prophets, his sons, his servants, his scriptures to tell us, come out into the free, liberated world of pure love. But at the same time, Maya Devi keeps putting all kinds of food in the cage. Just enjoy. Stay here and enjoy. But what is that food? It is the food of sensual and mental satisfactions. But the nature of this food, it always creates acidity and indigestion. Krishna tells us in Gita, what tastes like nectar at the beginning tastes like poison at the end. An intelligent person knows that those pleasures born of contacts between the senses and their objects are the sources of misery in life. Maya gives human beings, gives that trapped bird in the cage, the same food she's been giving you in your beastly body, your insect-like body, your bird and fish-like bodies. She simply adds a few flavored spices, especially for human satisfaction. Puna punas charvata charvananam. We are simply chewing that which we have chewed through millions and millions of species of life. But the door to the cage is open. Jeev jago, jeev jago, wake up, foolish bird. Get out of that prison house. Come. But the foolish spirit soul says, no, no, no. I have this. How could I give this up? And some people, they recognize God is calling me out and that's where I should go. But let me just finish this last meal. I'm just now coming. In this way, Garga Samhita describes the greatest tragedy is when the spirit soul takes this human form of life and does not sincerely pursue the path of self-realization. Vishnu Purana declares the greatest tragedy in all the universal creation is to waste a moment of human life simply chewing that which has been chewed through so many millions of species. If we just give up this useless, so-called enjoyments of material pleasure, we can come out of the cage of material bondage into the spiritual sky. There we will find our eternal home in the abode of the Lord, where all the essential desires of the soul are eternally and completely fulfilled. The essential need of every living entity is to love and to be loved. But love in this world is a source of great disappointment and frustration. Dukalayam ashashvatam. Because all experiences in this world and all the objects of those experiences are temporary and limited. Therefore, the soul is constantly looking for something more. But due to ignorance, does not really know what they are looking for. Everyone is looking for Krishna. That is the soul's eternal longing. To feel Krishna's unlimited love upon them. And to naturally reciprocate and offer our unlimited thirst to love to Lord Krishna. Krishna tells in Gita, Aham Bija Pratapita. He is the seed-giving father of all living beings. To love Krishna means to spontaneously and naturally love every living being without discrimination. This state of consciousness is the level by which we can achieve real peace. And there is no other way, because all other ideas of peace and happiness are superficial misconceptions. They are based on ignorance. Krishna is so kind. He makes himself available in a very simple way for all of us. Krishna tells in Gita, Rasoham apsukonteya. I am the taste of water. Water is an absolute necessity for life. The large percent of the body's composition is water. If you do not have sufficient water in your system, you become dehydrated and become very weak, sickly,
then you must die.
Water quenches our thirst and sustains our life. Krishna tells us, whenever you drink water, just remember me, that I am the taste of water. Even if you are a multi-millionaire, if you are in the heat of the desert and you're starving of thirst, if someone brings you a Mercedes-Benz or a beautiful Bollywood movie actor or actress to associate with, what will you say? Give me water! That is the nature of thirst. You would give everything you have for a glass of water to quench that thirst and sustain your life. So remember that Krishna is that nourishing, sustaining taste of water that we depend on. Pravasmi Sashi Surya, no. I am the light of sun and moon. Darkness represents ignorance. It is the most fearful and dangerous condition. Actually, all light originates in the sun. Even this electricity we have. In the electrical plants, they are taking elements from the earth that have been energized since time immemorial by the light of the sun. And by various processes, they are simply releasing the sun's energies to create electricity and light and heat. So Krishna says, whenever you see the sun, whenever you see light, just remember, I am that light of the sun. It is not just an imagination, it is a fact. The water is coming by the mercy of Krishna. Light and heat is emanating by the mercy of Krishna. 24 hours a day for all eternity, we are depending on the mercy of Krishna. Knowledge means to understand this and with a grateful heart remember Krishna in all circumstances. And because Krishna is pavitra, he is pure, as we remember him, we become Krishnized, purified. And in that purified state, we realize the sweetness of love. As we become purified, we, by Krishna's grace, are taken out of that bird cage of material bondage and brought to the eternal freedom of the liberated soul. Krishna has so mercifully appeared in his name. Nam nam akari baho nija sarva shakti statrapi tani amita smaranena kala. Lord Chaitanya prayed that Krishna, all of your opulences, your powers, energies, and sweetness, your abode, your form, everything is within your name. How forgiving, how accommodating, how merciful you are. I have rejected you and offended you since time immemorial, and yet you're appearing to me in your name to liberate me. But I am so unfortunate, I have no attraction for the chanting of your name. Within the name of Krishna is his eternal form, his pastimes, his abode. But Srila Prabhupada explains in this beautiful purport, we must understand how to properly chant the holy names of the Lord. Trinarapi sunichena. To be humble, like the blade of grass. Accepting a very lowly position, happily willing to be trampled by everyone else's feet. Taror ivasihishnana, tolerant like a tree. So many impediments will come in our life, but those impediments serve to strengthen the sincere and discard those who are insincere. A devotee welcomes impediments because in this temporary world there is an impediment no matter what you pursue. whether it is a college education or a business or a political career or even being a father or a mother. Unlimited impediments come in everyone's life. But when we are tolerant and maintain our sacred vows of chanting the holy names and living according to the pure principles of Krishna consciousness, we grow. We spiritually flourish in the face of these impediments. Amanina manadena. To expect no respect from others and to offer all respect to others. Due to the modes of material nature, different people acquire different qualities in this world. And there are so many dualities. There is the Brahmins, Kshatriyas, the Vaishyas, the Shudras. There is Americans and Pakistanis and Indians and Russians and Europeans and Africans. There is black and red and white and yellow. There is male and female, rich and poor, educated and illiterate, healthy and sick, old and young. There are Hindus and Muslims and Christians and Jews and Jains and Zoroastrians. There is capitalists and communists and socialists. There are religionists and atheists. So many dualities, so many distinctions. And they're creating so much conflict, both internally and externally. But the chanting of the holy names cleanses the mirror of the heart. Chetu darapana marjanam bhava mahadavagni nivapanam. If you take that water, that pure water that is mixed with the mud of the three modes of material nature, which creates all these dualities and misconceptions and artificial designations, and you filter it, you bring it back to its natural, transparent state. The process in this age of Kali, which is most beneficial for filtering the water of our consciousness, is the chanting of the holy names in the association of devotees. When we remember Krishna's name, we remember Krishna. But Krishna reciprocates us according to our aspirations in life. That is declared in Sri Bhagavad Gita. Ye yathamam prapadyante tam sthataiva bhajamyaham. Our true wealth is to the degree we have an attitude of servitude. Because that is our natural position. To love means to serve. And we can only attain love through service. Gopi Bharatur Patakamalayora Das 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 Anudas. Therefore, our ultimate aspiration in life should be the servant of the servant of the servant of Sri Krishna, who is Lord of Gopis. And if we remember Krishna in this spirit, then naturally, at the time of death, Krishna will appear before us. His grace, Sriman Radhe Shyam Prabhu, has selected this verse for us to speak on today. It was a surprise for me, but it is of greatest importance. Whoever at the end of his life quits his body remembering me alone at once attains my nature. Of this there is no doubt. We can get a very, very good understanding of where a person is going after death by the way they lived in their life. If a person is sincerely always aspiring to remember Krishna and to serve Krishna, we know that at the time of death, they will go to Krishna. Krishna will personally pick them up to reciprocate with their sincerity and either bring them to a more suitable position for spiritual life or take them back home, back to Godhead. If we condition ourselves through chanting the holy names, hearing about Krishna, and serving Krishna's devotees, then naturally, beyond our efforts, Krishna appears before us at the time of death. What we want in life is what is all important. Just yesterday, one of our very dear and beloved devotees suddenly departed from this world. Many of you know her. She is the daughter of Janava Devi, one of the most prominent devotees and preachers in this Pune and Maharashtra area. This young girl left this world at the age of 22. Her name is Shyam Sundari Devi Das. From her very, very small childhood, her mother nourished her with bhakti. This is the perfection of motherly love. When a small child is born, the mother expresses her love by nourishing the child with the milk from her breast, which is the most perfect food for the child's physical and mental health and development. But the most essential responsibility of mother and father is to also nourish the spirit soul with the nectarine ambrosial milk of bhakti. Because we become like what we associate with. Shyam Sundari Devi acquired that spirit of devotion from her mother and the sadhus and the devotees that were always around her mother. And we have seen her from her very, very small childhood. She loved to sing and to dance and to hear about Krishna and to do dramas of Krishna. And she gained a very, very deep and profound happiness in serving Krishna and serving his devotees. This is the power of association. She had such a pure and innocent heart. She just wanted to love Krishna as her only purpose of life. For any of you who have gone into her bedroom, all over her bedroom there's little notes where she's preaching to herself, "Do not forget Krishna. Don't let your mind cheat you. Make sure you never offend Krishna's devotees. Never forget to chant your 16 rounds attentively each day. Do not let Maya think that you can enjoy this world." All little notes like this. So sincerely, she just never wanted to forget Krishna. And she would help her mother in deity worship. Spontaneously enthusiastic to serve in any and every way. And at a very, very young age, she was so eager to take initiation. And after she took initiation, she took her vows so very, very seriously. But very humble, always thinking herself incapable and fallen and begging for mercy and blessings of others. In this age of Kali, for someone to pass through their teenage years with such purity, with such devotion, with such virtuous aspirations is extremely rare. Recently, when she was in Vrindavan, she would stand before Radha Shyam Sundar in the month of Kartik for 2, 3, or more hours a day just praying. How many of us can just stand for 2, 3 hours every day and just pray to the deities without being impatient And the pujaris were the only one who took note of this. They saw tears in her eyes, offering prayers. Prayers for Krishna to bestow mercy upon those she loves and to bless her with pure devotional service. She had an incurable disease just over the last year or two, and she went deeper and deeper into her bhakti. Not long ago, I was in Russia, and someone gave me a gift of a beautiful badge with a pin on it, with a very artistic painting of Yashoda and Gopal. As a gift, I offer that to Shamsundari Devi Dasi. And she put that on her bead bag and considered it her most cherished possession in life. She took her chanting so seriously. Yesterday she had immense internal bleeding. I was told that she was brought to hospital and she was unconscious. Then briefly, she had respirators and everything on her. She came to consciousness. And she cried out to her mother, "Give me my bead bag." And she took that bead bag and just pressed it to her heart, remembering Krishna's names. And then she lost consciousness and soon departed from this world. That is the proof that our process works. When you're unconscious and you have no oxygen to breathe, bleeding profusely internally, and you come to consciousness for just a few moments, you can't intellectually, philosophically reason, what should I ask for? It was the spontaneous expression of her heart, "Give me my japa mala." She had that attachment to chanting the holy names. That attachment to that gift of her guru of Yashoda and Gopal. It was spontaneous. So we understand. Antakale chamame vasmaran vakvakalev. She was remembering Krishna. Krishna appeared before her at the most critical moment of her life. Why? Because she practiced sincerely, with humility, remembering Krishna. She was Krishna conscious. And that is a glorious success. Shukadeva Goswami tells us in Srimad Bhagavatam that it is not a great thing to live long. There are tortoises that live several hundred years old. There are trees that live thousands of years old. There are even birds that live several hundred years old. Shukadeva Goswami said, better one moment of full consciousness in Krishna than a long, long life. Because in the view of eternity, whether you live 120 years or 20 years really is not much difference. But with whatever time you have, if you can remember Krishna with a pure heart, in a mood of servant of the servant of the servant, your life becomes perfect. The soul gains eternal entrance into Krishna's abode to participate in Sri Radha Shamsundar Radha Kunja Bihari's eternal loving pastimes. Our beloved Guru Maharaj Srila Prabhupada, on behalf of our great Guru Parampara, has provided this gift for all of us. He has opened the door of the cage of material bondage with the most attractive, enjoyable lifestyle of devotion. The best association, the best food, the best entertainment, the best of everything. Let us take this gift very seriously. And whoever we are, young or old, rich or poor, doesn't matter. The only criterion of our qualification is our sincerity. Sincere to have the commitment and the determination to follow the process honestly and beg for the blessings of Krishna and his devotees. Thank you very much. Today is the disappearance day of Srila Jiva Goswami. Would you like to hear something about Srila Jiva Goswami? What does that mean?
Long lecture.
I will speak for only a few minutes because Radhe Shyam Prabhu has ordered me to speak on this verse, but in my independent nature I will speak something else now. To take up from our subject of the lecture today, Sri Jiva Goswami was a tiny child. His father's name is Anupam, and his uncles were Rupan Sanatan Goswami. Previous to attaining the association of Lord Chaitanya, they were working as very high-placed government officials in the government of the Nawab Hussein Shah. They were praying for Lord Chaitanya to deliver them because they knew he was the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he had a plan. He told his devotees he wanted to go to Vrindavan. But Lord Chaitanya wanted to teach the world proper respect and etiquette. So he would not go until he received the blessings of the Vaishnavas. Their blessing was, you can go if we can go with you. So when he departed from Sri Jagannath Puri, many, many devotees followed him. And as he was doing kirtan through the towns and the villages, people would just leave their homes and follow him. As he was traveling through Orissa, there was thousands of people with him. Then tens and thousands. Then hundreds and thousands. By the time he reached Bengal, there was millions of people following him. His beautiful golden form, dancing in transcendental ecstasy, attracted everyone's hearts. And everyone, they forgot who they were, what their particular designation was. All they knew was, I am Lord Chaitanya's servant. And they were intoxicated with ecstatic love while loudly chanting the holy name.
Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Ram, Hare Ram, Ram Ram, Hare Hare.
Should I continue? Thank you. I asked that just to see if you were awake. Because the natural tendency is when I speak, people sleep. So Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu actually diverted from the path to Vrindavan just to come to the place called Ramkeli. In all of Bengal, that was the most dangerous place to bring Harinam Sankirtan party. Because that was a capital of the Malecha king, Nawab Hussein Shah. He fiercely hated Hindus. But he put Dabir Khas and Sakar Malik, who later became Rupan Sanatan, as his chief ministers, just to subdue and subjugate the Hindus and get their support. But it was absolutely outlawed for any Hindu to perform public demonstration of their religion. if any Hindu, any follower of Vedic culture, would publicly do any of their religious activities, they would be imprisoned, plundered, punished, sometimes even tortured and killed. People trembled in fear of him. So cruel and so powerful. But Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was fearless. He came into Ramkeli, the Nawab Hussein Shah's capital, with millions of people, and everyone was loudly chanting the Holy
Name. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Ram, Hare Ram, Ram Ram, Hare Hare.
And everyone was utterly fearless to do so simply because they were energized by the mercy of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So the king heard this uproarious, loud kirtan. And he asked one of his servants, go find out what's happening out there. The servant came back and explained that there's this saint. He's so beautiful. His eyes are like lotus petals that stretch practically to his ears. He has a complexion that's effulgent and brilliant like pure gold. His long arms extend beneath his knees. He keeps them raised very high as he's singing the holy names. His beautiful nose is like a sesame flower. His lips are fresh and bright like the bimba fruit. His neck is like that of a lion. His arms are like the trunks of elephants. His chest is broad. His waist is thin. And the most amazing thing is there's rivers of tears constantly flowing from his eyes in ecstatic love. His limbs are trembling as he sings the holy names. His beautiful hairs are all standing on end like the kadamba flower. His voice is choked up in ecstasy. He is literally bathing the earth with his incessant tears of love. When he chants the holy names, it is so loud, it is so tumultuous, it seems to fill the entire universe. He is dancing so beautifully. His form and his dance is the very personification of ultimate beauty. Sometimes in his ecstatic love, he leaps into the air. And he falls down to the ground. He breaks rocks into pieces. And yet his body, which is softer than fresh butter, is never harmed. This saint, I have seen many sannyasis and holy people, but no one is like this. He is so much intoxicated with ecstatic love of God that he has transformed millions of people's lives. People have left their homes, their occupations, their everything by the millions just to follow him. Right now in your city, there are millions of people intoxicated by his merciful glance, dancing in ecstasy and loudly chanting the holy names. Nawab Hussein Shah was shocked to hear this. So he called one of his very, very confidential secretaries, Keshav Khan, who actually happened to be secretly a devotee. He asked, who is this saint that has come to Ramkeli? Tell me all about him. Keshav Khan became very fearful.
He was thinking, if I tell him about Lord Chaitanya, then this Nawab, he will be so angry, he will send his armies and he may kill them all. So he said, actually, whatever you heard is just an exaggeration. He's just a common beggar, one of these sadhus with his begging bowl, just like so many other come. And he has a few followers. He's nothing. Not worthy of your consideration. Nawab Hussain Shah became very angry. Ma! What are you saying? You have committed an offense to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. He is the Supreme Lord. Intoxicated with ecstatic love of God, he is spreading ecstatic love of God to everyone. I'm a king, and I have to pay people so much or threaten them to do anything for me. But this man doesn't give anybody anything, and millions of people are surrendering their lives and doing everything he wants. He is the Lord who has descended from the spiritual world to Ram Keli. And you are such an ignorant fool. You are calling him an insignificant beggar. This is an offense. Today I proclaim that this Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, who has so mercifully come, he can do anything he wants, anywhere he wants in my kingdom. Would and he's him. Free to spread the glories of the holy name.
Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Ram, Hare Ram, Ram Ram, Hare Hare.
This was a very great surprise to Keshav Khan.
The kirtan went on and on. But some of the Brahmins were thinking that this Nawab Hussain Shah, he could change his mind any time. So it will be better if Lord Chaitanya stops his kirtan and goes somewhere else. So actually the Brahmins and devotees wrote a message and gave it to his associates. But Lord Chaitanya was so engrossed in kirtan, they were waiting for a moment's break, the Brahmins, so they could give him the note to tell him, please stop and go somewhere else. It's not safe here. But Lord Chaitanya was so immersed in chanting Krishna's names and Radharani's names that there wasn't a moment gap. Minutes went by. Hours went by. Days went by. There was no eating, no sleeping, no drinking. There was only chanting. The Brahmins had to go, so they gave the note to the devotees. They were just standing around with the note, but Lord Chaitanya didn't even notice them. He wanted to teach us how we should be absorbed in Sankirtan. No distraction. Ultimately, he saw that there was some anxiety. So he ended the kirtan. And he told the devotees,
why do you fear? I am time personified. When the absolute truth is presence, let me see who will stop my chanting of the holy names.
And then he declared very loudly that I have descended from the spiritual world to inspire everyone to chant Hare Krishna. And then he made a historical prediction in Ram Keli. In every town and village throughout the world, my name will be chanted. Have no fear. It was late at night. Lord Chaitanya went to a secluded place where there was a tamal tree and a kadamba tree. At that time, Sakar Malik and Dabir Khas, along with their brother, Sri Ballabha, disguised themselves. Incognito, they secretly went in the middle of the night to meet Lord Chaitanya. First they approached Nityananda Prabhu and Haridas Thakur. Because even these great souls knew that you do not approach the Lord directly, but with the blessings of his dear servants. They were brought in before Lord Chaitanya. They manifested the ultimate expression of humility. With straw between their teeth and cloth around their necks, they fell at the feet of the Lord.
weeping and crying. They appeal to the Lord that we are the most fallen, the most sinful. We are immersed in ignorance. We have no good qualification. We are addicted to bad association. We are more fallen and sinful even than Jagai and Madhai. We have no qualification to receive your mercy. Our asking for mercy is like a little dwarf attempting to touch the moon. But you are Patita Pavana. Without your causeless mercy, we have no hope in our life. Please be kind to us. We surrender to you. Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu began to cry. He said, "Please stop speaking these words. Your humility is breaking my heart." He lifted them up and embraced them. He accepted them as his own disciples and awarded them the names Rupa Goswami, Sanatan Goswami, and Anupam. And he instructed them that very soon you will attain my eternal service. Lord Chaitanya personally placed his lotus feet on their heads. This sweet, loving exchange was witnessed by the little child, Jiva, who happened to be watching from a distance. Seeing the humility and the surrender of his father and uncles and the beauty and mercy of Lord Chaitanya, his heart was transformed. Due to that experience, his whole life was dedicated to the loving service of the Lord. Soon after this, his father, Anupam, departed from this world. When that news came to the small child, Jiva, his heart was broken. And he was thinking, "What is the use of this material world of death? I want to follow the spirit of my father's devotion. I want to always be in the shelter of my uncles." But he was a small boy. He did not play with the other children. He had made little deities of Krishna and Balaram. His entire life was revolving around service to Krishna and Balaram. This small child, Jiva child, what would he do during the day? He would make offerings of picking fruits and getting other preparations and just offer it to his deities. He would make different little altars for his deities to sit on. He would get nice ornaments for the deities and dress them and bathe them. He would sing for them and dance for them. He would weep tears of love as he'd serve Krishna and Balaram. And when night time came, he could not give up the association. Every single night he would sleep with the deities of Krishna and Balaram embraced to his heart. And one night he had a dream. He saw his deities of Krishna and Balaram. And then he saw that same form of Lord Chaitanya that he saw at Ram Keli on that day. He saw Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu performing glorious kirtan. And by his side was Lord Nityananda Prabhu. And Lord Chaitanya and Lord Nityananda cast their merciful glance upon him, placed their feet on his head. In this dream, little Jiva was enraptured in divine ecstasy. Then he saw Lord Chaitanya transform into his deity of Krishna, and Lord Nityananda Prabhu transform into his deity of Balaram. From that day on, he only wanted to go to Vrindavan to be with Rupa and Sanatana Goswami. But his mother was a widow, and you know how mothers could be. She wanted to protect her child. So one day, He told his mother that he wanted to go to his native place for a visit. But he told the boatman to take him to Navadweep. There, he went to the house of Srivas Pandit, where Nityananda Prabhu was sitting under a tree waiting for his arrival. Jiva surrendered his life at Nityananda Prabhu's lotus feet. With folded palms and tears coming from his heart through his eyes, he prayed, "O Lord Nityananda, you are Balaram himself. There is no other way of achieving the loving service of Lord Chaitanya without your causeless mercy. Please be merciful to me." Lord Nityananda Prabhu, after placing his lotus feet on Jiva's head, invited him to do the Navadvip Dham Parikrama. First, Lord Nityananda took Jiva to the house of Lord Chaitanya, where they met Lord Chaitanya's mother, Sachi Devi, who was none other than the incarnation of Yashoda Mai, and Lord Chaitanya's wife, previous to his sannyas, Vishnupriya. Jiva worshipped Sachimata and Vishnupriya, and they accepted him like their own child, brought him into Lord Chaitanya's own home, and personally cooked prasad with their own hands and fed it to him. Then Lord Chaitanya's personal servant, who was taking care of Vishnupriya, Bamsi Badana, was called to show Jiva Goswami the holy places with Nityananda Prabhu. They went through all the 9 islands of Navadvip. Nityananda Prabhu was personally giving wonderful descriptions. Afterward, Nityananda Prabhu told Jiva Goswami that you should go to Varanasi, where there is a great devotee and scholar, Madhusudan Vachaspati. You should study Sanskrit and the holy scriptures from him. And then you should go to Vrindavan, because Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu has given Vrindavan to your family. Go there and live your life with Sri Rupa and Sanatan Goswamis. He returned home for some time, and by the will of destiny, his mother left this world. He went to Varanasi. He became the most learned scholar in that very high seat of learning. Even though he was only a teenage boy, he mastered Sanskrit, he mastered all the various systems of philosophy, and even authored incredible books. Then on Nityananda Prabhu's order, he went to Vrindavan. He arrived when he was 20 years old to be welcomed by the Rupa Goswami, Sanatan Goswami, Raghunath Das Goswami, Raghunath Bhat Goswami, Gopal Bhat Goswami, Lokanath Goswami, Bhugarbha Goswami, Kashishwar Pandit, and all of these great, great souls. And they accepted him. He requested Sanatan Goswami to give him initiation. But out of humility, Sanatan Goswami requested Rupa Goswami to initiate him. But Rupa Goswami wanted to teach the world what is a disciple. Although Sri Jiva Goswami had already earned the title of one of the greatest scholars in the world, he engaged him in very menial, simple services. He would go out and beg alms for his Guru Maharaj. He would clean the vessels and the pots for his Guru Maharaj. He would gather palm leaves and prepare them for his Guru Maharaj writing. He would do menial cleaning services. He would massage the feet of his Guru Maharaj. And when his Guru Maharaj saw he actually had the real spirit of menial service and humility, then he gave him initiation. Because knowledge without humility is very dangerous. If knowledge makes you proud, it defeats the whole purpose of what you're trying to attain through your knowledge. Rupa Goswami loved Jiva so much that he personally carved a deity out of stone with his own hands. And that deity, carved by the lotus hands of Rupa Goswami, was given in love to Jiva Goswami to worship. That is the deity of Sri Radha Damodar. How he worshipped that deity. It is described in our holy scriptures that one time he was doing some preparations for his deity's puja, and he heard the beautiful song of a flute. He came running to the deity room, and there, with his own eyes, he saw Damodar, his deity, playing the flute and smiling, glancing upon him lovingly. Then he saw the deity not only smiling and playing the flute, but dancing as he was playing the flute. In this way, Jiva Goswami would actually see Sri Radha Damodar performing their eternal leelas, and how it attracted his heart with love. Jiva Goswami Prandanahe Jai Radha Damodar. He became his life and soul. There are many beautiful stories of Sri Jiva Goswami's life in Vrindavan. One time a scholar, Rup Narayan, came to defeat all other scholars. He already traveled throughout India defeating all scholars. He challenged Rup and Sanatan to debate. They said, "We're not qualified to debate against you. You're very learned. We're not learned." "Nah, I was told that you are the greatest scholars in the northern provinces of India." So, you know, followers and well-wishers, they make so many exaggerations. "You should not even waste your time with us." "Ah, then you sign certificate, I have been defeated by Rup Narayan." So they signed the certificate and sent him on his way. They were not concerned with prestige or position or fame. They didn't want to waste their time. So then he approached Jiva. "I challenge you to debate. I have already defeated your uncles. I have already smashed your guru. Look, I have certificate with his signature." Jiva Goswami became angry. Not because of an offense to himself, but because he wanted to protect the dignity of his guru and our parampara from this rascal. So they had debate for 7 days on the bank of Jamuna. And in the end, it was unanimously agreed that Jiva Goswami was victorious. So he was very happy. He went to tell the news to Rupa Goswami. Rupa Goswami looked at him very gravely. He said, "Anyone who is attached to prestige, fame, or position has no right to live in Vrindavan. Why did you waste your time debating with this scholar? You have no right to live in Vrindavan because pride is detected in your heart." Now, actually, he had no pride in his heart. He was just trying to defend the integrity of his guru and our parampara. But he was so humble, he did not say, "Guru Maharaj, you don't understand." He actually accepted, "Yes, I am sinful, I am fallen, and I am proud, and I have no right to live in Vrindavan." So he went to Mathura, and he lived in the hollow of a tree, and began performing severe austerities to atone for his offense of being proud. He was hardly eating anything, and he was just crying and chanting the holy names loudly day and night for 1 year. Sanatan Goswami came there and saw his condition, and he went back to his younger brother Rupa Goswami and told him that there is a very important principle of Lord Chaitanya's teachings that you are not carefully following. Rupa Goswami was so humble, he didn't say, "Ha! What do you mean? How can you say I'm Rupa Goswami?" He said, "Oh, please tell me. How can I improve?" So Sanatana Goswami said, "List the principal teachings of Mahaprabhu."
And as he was speaking, one of the principles is compassion to the living entities. Jivadoy. Then he realized he should be kind to Jiva Goswami also.
So he called him back.
And when he saw Jiva Goswami was sickly, Rupa Goswami personally nursed him to health. Now you may ask, why did Rupa Goswami do like that? Because he wanted to show the world the glory of the humility and faith of a true Vaishnava. He wanted to establish a standard for all sincere devotees. When Rupa Sanatan departed from this world, all the Vaishnavas unanimously appointed Jiva Goswami to be the leader of the Gaudiya Vaishnava Sampradaya. Shyamananda Goswami, Narottam Das Thakur, Srinivasacharya, and so many other great souls were personally trained by Jiva Goswami. It was he that sent them to distribute the book. Jiva Goswami, he cherished the Vaishnava literature so dearly that he was the first person in our parampara's history to create a library of all the scriptures of Gaudiya Vaishnavism. He preserved the books with such worship and sacred reverence. It is explained that at one time, even the Emperor Akbar, when he heard about Jiva Goswami's pure devotional qualities, he actually disguised himself and came to Vrindavan just to meet Jiva Goswami. And his heart was so transformed by the experience of that association with Jiva Goswami that he actually supported the sponsorship of many, many great souls to build temples in Vrindavan. This is the power of association of a pure soul. Srila Jiva Goswami wrote over 400,000 Sanskrit verses. Over 25 books are still known today that he had written. In these books, he systematically explained the philosophy and culture of pure Gaudiya Vaishnavism. Gopal Champur so beautifully describes the Leelas of Krishna in Vrindavan and Dwarka with such pure, unalloyed devotion and realization. The Sat Sandarbhas, very, very, very profound, intricate, scientific, scriptural detail explain the philosophy of Lord Chaitanya. Perhaps there has never been a greater philosophical composition than the six Sandarbhas. Srila Prabhupada explains, of all philosophies in the world, Gaudiya Vaishnavism is most complete and inclusive. And of all philosophers of the Gaudiya Sampradaya, Jiva Goswami is the greatest. Even today at the Hindi Banaras University, where Krishnananda Prabhu studied, there is an entire department dedicated to studying Jiva Goswami's works. And our own beloved Guru Maharaj, Srila Prabhupada, in his preparation to come to America, Europe, Africa, Australia, and throughout all of India, preaching the message of pure love of God, he resided for 6 years in Jiva Goswami's Radha Dambodar Temple. It was here at Jiva Goswami's lotus feet that Srila Prabhupada translated and wrote purports to the first canto of Srimad Bhagavatam in 3 volumes. He considered that those books were so essential for his mission. Recently, I was with my beloved godbrother, Sri Dayananda Goswami Maharaj. And he explained to me something that really moved my heart. Would you like to hear?
Yeah.
He told me that Srila Prabhupada personally told him a sweet story.
After Srila Prabhupada traveled on the Jaladutta for approximately 1 month, crossing the Arabian Sea and the Atlantic Ocean on a cargo ship, when he arrived in New York, he did not know anyone. He didn't know anything about America. He was 70 years old. He just suffered on the boat several heart attacks, seasickness, and weakness. Can you imagine 70 years old? Just days before you had heart attacks? You have no money, you don't know anyone, you're coming to a strange place, and your mission is to start a worldwide movement? Prabhupada told Hridayananda Goswami Maharaj that when I came down from the plank that brings you off the boat, I didn't know whether I should walk right or left. I didn't know where I was or what to do or how to do it. But I knew I had my books with me. And because I had Srimad Bhagavatam to distribute, I knew that I had a stable foundation to establish Krishna consciousness all over the world. Praying for the mercy of Jiva Goswami and Rupa Goswami in Jiva Goswami's eternal home at Radha Damodar Temple. Jiva Goswami's eternal home. Prabhupada began his mission. So on this very holy day, let us place our heads at the feet of Srila Prabhupada and Srila Jiva Goswami, because they have taught us how to always remember Krishna and never forget Krishna. They have given us the science, the philosophy, the culture of how to always remember Krishna and never forget Krishna. Antakali chamameva smaran makva kalevaram. Yaprayati samad bhavam yati nasyatri samshaya. And if we follow these principles sincerely in our life, Krishna will appear at the time of death and take us back home, back to Godhead. Whoever we may be, big brahmachari like Krishnananda Prabhu, or a simple girl like Shyam Sundari Devi Dasi, if we are simply sincere, Krishna will be there to take us back to his lotus feet. I sincerely thank you very, very much. Let us have Sankirtan. Let us offer this beautiful Sankirtan to our dear Shyam Sundari Devi Dasi in sincere way for Radha Kunja Bihari to bestow their full mercy and blessings upon her.